beginning of Parshas Vayera, Kadosh Baruch Hu mentions that he made a krisis bris with the Yovois to give Eretz Yisrael L'aseis lahem es Eretz Kenan, to give Eretz Yisrael to the Jewish people. Why do you say L'aseis lahem? Should say L'aseis lahem. The Yovois passed away already. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that this is one of the several Makaris and Chumash for the idea of Tchias HaMeis. That Kadosh Baruch Hu promises that the Yovois will come back to life, and they will enjoy Eretz Yisrael. Why was there a need for a krisis bris? Because the Ribbono Shel Olam already gave Eretz Yisrael to Avraham Avinu. Kadosh Baruch Hu told Avraham Avinu to walk around the borders. Kol misalch baras lo kol rochbo kiluchah tenano. And the Gemara has a tradition that the pshat and the pasuk kiluchah tenano means that that was the kinyan, that was the kinyan chazakah, that Avraham Avinu was kind of Eretz Yisrael. So if he owned it already, so what did the Ribbono Shel Olam make a bris that he's going to give Eretz Yisrael to the Jewish people? So the Chazon Ish explains that normally, when a person owns property, he can sell the property to someone else and it won't belong to him anymore. Or the property can be lost in war. There is an international principle of Kibush Melchama. It's later in Gittin, Daf Lamed Ches. The Gemara learns that from Sukkim. It doesn't matter whether the Jews won against the non-Jews, and the non-Jews won against the Jews, and the non-Jews won against the non-Jews. The Gemara can't imagine Jews waging war against Jews. So the Gemara says, whoever wages war against another nation, the winning nation acquires all of the property of the losing nation as theirs. So one might have thought, if Eretz Yisrael belonged to Avraham Avinu, and it went Beirusha to Yitzchak and Yankiv, if they want, they can give it away, they can sell it. Or if they'll lose Eretz Yisrael in a war, so the conquering army will acquire ownership of the land for their nation. So that's why Kadosh Baruch Hu made a bris. A bris, Ramban HaChumash says, a bris means al kof panim, under all circumstances. Never, it can't be changed at all. Eretz Yisrael belongs to the Jews all the way through the history of the world. And when in 1948 they established the government, the Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael, wasn't that the United Nations, out of the kindness of their heart, or the British, were running Eretz Yisrael from the First World War. It's not that out of the goodness of their heart, the British gave Eretz Yisrael to the Jewish people. It belonged to the Jewish people all along from the days of Avraham Avinu. So that was the effectiveness of this bris. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Beis HaBchira that there was a difference between the Kedusha Rishayna of Eretz and the Kedusha Shniya. He says the Kedusha Rishayna of Eretz Yisrael was batla at the time of Churban Bais Rishon, because the Kedusha Rishayna rested on Kibush. So once the Kibush, Dalet Zayin Shekavshe was Zayin Shechilku, the Chalukas Eretz Yisrael was the Gemara of the Kibush. Since the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael rested on the Kibush, so once the Kibush was undone in the days of Nebuchadnezzar, when the Babylonian armies won the war against the Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael, so the Kibush was undone, so the Kedusha Saoris vanished into thin air. But the Kedusha Shniya, the Rambam says, didn't rest on Kibush at all. There was no independent Jewish government at all till the days of the Hashemana, until deep into the period of the Bais Sheni. And there was Kedusha Saoris from the very outset. So the Rambam says the Kedusha Saoris, the second time around, was based on Chazaka. What does it mean with that word Chazaka? He made up his own term, Chazaka. So we once had, years ago, we had a visiting rabbi from Eretz Yisrael, gave a shiur, a guest shiur in Rabbi Soloveitchik's class. Yeshiva was learning Sanhedrin, so he gave a shiur on the first Mishnah in Sanhedrin. So he understood like Abisa Zalman Meltzer. He writes in his Sefer, in the Eben Hazal, that Chazaka means the Kini Chazaka, when you call a Karka. Karka dis niknis bekesef bishtar b'chazaka. So he understood that the Jewish people lost their ownership of Eretz Yisrael during the 70 years of Golas Bavel, because Kibush Melchama is an international rule. So since the Babylonian armies won the war against the Jewish government at the time of the Churban Bais Rishon, so the Jewish people lost their ownership of Eretz. So they had to make a new Kinyan all over again. And that was the Kinyan Chazaka. So Rav Soloveitchik said that, with all the respect to the visiting rabbi, he said that it's not correct. There is no such thing. The Jewish people never lost their ownership of Eretz Yisrael. That's like the Chazon Ish says over here, that the bris, the reason why the Ribbono Shel Olam made a krisis bris over the Jewish ownership of Eretz Yisrael means that bris is al kopanim. That's the Ramban's lashon in several places in his commentary on Yiddish. Whenever the Ribbono Shel Olam makes a bris, means that it's under all circumstances, even though for some reason or another one might have thought that Maybe it's going to change. Our bris means it's never going to change. Eretz Yisrael always belonged to the Jewish people. I remember there was a guest, Rosh Hashiva, visiting in Lawrence 10 years ago. And he was giving a shiur in Rabbi Wurzberger's shul. So I was sitting next to Rabbi Wurzberger. So he was giving a whole fancy interpretation with Maral Miprags, all kinds of complicated things. And he was assuming also that chazaka means the kinya chazaka. So remember, Rabbi Wurzberger whispered into my ear that it's absolutely not correct. That's not pshat in the chazaka. That's what Rav Soloveitchik also thought. That the Rambam, when he talks about chazaka, when they made the kedusha shniyah, was like the chazaka. They didn't understand that it means like the Eben Hazel. It doesn't mean a kinya chazaka. Somehow it means hit yashvut, when the Jewish people moved into Eretz Yisrael. And then we continue to read. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gam ani nosas yisyadi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu swore that he's going to give Vaseis asol Abraham liYitzchak liYaakov nasati asol lechem barasha ani Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that he swore. That's what the Ramban writes. A shvu is the same as a bris is the same as a shvu, and a shvu means al kalponim, under all circumstances. So in Pasuk Dalet, Eretz Yisrael is referred to as Hakim Osi as brisi itam. And then in Pasuk Ches, it says, Sasi Yisyot, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the Shavuot to give Eretz Yisrael to the Jewish people. Eretz Yisrael is referred to as Mor Rasha. Nasati Yosel Lechem Mor Rasha, Ani Hashem. The Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu himself wasn't sure what the word Mor Rasha means. Is it the same as Yerusha? Eretz Yisrael already belonged to Avraham Avinu. And when Avraham Avinu died, he went to Yerusha to Yitzchak. When he died, he went to Yankim, and then he went to the Shvatim. We get it as a Yerusha, or does Mor Rasha mean that it was a promise that was given to Avraham Avinu that it belonged to the Jewish people at some later time? So the Gemara says when the Bnei Slavchad raised the question by Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe Rabbeinu himself wasn't sure what he said the Nebuah Mor Rasha, he wasn't sure what it meant. It's interesting. Then the Gemara says Rabbi Shalom told him that the word Mor Rasha does mean the same as Yerusha. When Avraham Avinu walked around the borders, he was kind of, that was the Kenya Chazaka, he was kind of Eretz Yisrael Adoridoris, and it still belongs to us at Ayayim Azad because of that original, that initial Kenyan that Avraham Avinu made by walking around the borders of Eretz Yisrael. So why does the Taka use the word Marasha? So the Pashta says, L'chayra, that the word Yerusha Marasha are two different things. They both mean Yerusha. One means an inheritance, and one means a heritage. An inheritance, my rich uncle died, and he left me money. And I can do whatever I want with the money. I can invest the money wisely. I can gamble the money away. I can give it away to Maton. I can burn the money. I can do whatever I want. That's an inheritance. Heritage is something that I got birusha, and it's understood that it's my responsibility to transmit that heritage to the next generation, that it should stay in the family. This is the heritage that you transmit further. That's why the word Marasha appears in Chumash only in two places, with respect to Eretz Yisrael here in Parshas Vayera, and then later on in Ha'azinu. Torah Tziv Halana Moshe Marasha Ki Hilas Yaakov, that the Torah is a Marasha. Marasha means that we transmit the Torah from generation to generation. We have no right to cut out parts of the Torah, to change anything in the Torah. Eretz Yisrael is also, we have no right to give it away. You don't have the ability to give it away. That was the time that Rav Soloveitchik said the name of his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. He thought that the whole Heter Mechira for Shnas HaShmita doesn't exist at all. He had a very big Chiddush that the Gemara says, Yerushalayim lo nischalka l'shvatim. In the days of Yeshua ben Nun, when they divided Eretz Yisrael amongst all the different Shvatim, so the Gemara has a machlekes abiyud in the Rabbanon, and the accepted opinion in the first Perek in Yuma, and Dafir Aleph, and Baba Kama, and the end of Perek Meruba, and different places in Shas. So the final maskana is Yerushalayim lo nischalka l'shvatim. The days of Yeshua ben Nun, they didn't give, Yerushalayim was, half of Yerushalayim was in Chelka Shel Binyamin, half of Yerushalayim was in Chelka Shel Yehuda, but they didn't have Mamanizdika ownership over that half. It was called Chelka Shel Yehuda, Chelka Shel Binyamin. The rest of Chelka Shel Yehuda belonged to Shevet Yehuda, and they divided it among Mishpachas and among Yechidim. And Yerushalayim, there was no private ownership. So the Gemara says when the people came to the Oil Regal in Yerushalayim, the locals who lived there didn't have the right to charge rent because the home didn't belong to them. It was Lo Nischalka L'Shvatim. There was no private ownership on anything in Yerushalayim. So Rav Soloveitchik said over the name of his father that at the time of Churban Bais Rishon, there was an act of Kibush Mochama. Nebuchadnezzar's armies took over Eretz Yisrael. So all the individual people lost their private ownership. Klal Yisrael continued to own Eretz Yisrael because HaKadosh Baruch Hu made increase his bris. Nosas Yisrael dehakim os yis bris. Klal Yisrael didn't lose their ownership. But the individual people did lose their ownership. So during the 70 years of Golas Babel, true Eretz Yisrael belonged to the Jewish people, but it didn't belong to the Yechidim. That's how Rav Soloveitchik's father assumed, that the Kibush Mochama canceled the ownership of the individual people, just the Klal Yisrael owned it. The question is, you read the story in Sefer Yirmiyah, that's the Haftarah for Parshas Bahar, so it says that his cousin came to sell before Eretz Yisrael fell to the hands of the Babylonian armies. So his cousin came from the city on Anosos and he wanted to sell him a field. So the Baruch Shalom said he should buy the field and he should write up a document. And he said, put it away in a satam b'chlicheris. He should put the shtar in a container that it should last. Lamal yamdu yamim rabim. The Gemara in Gittin quotes these psukim in order that the document should last for a long time. And when the Jewish people will come back in another 70 years after the Golas Bavel, so Yirmiyah Novi will not be alive anymore. So his grandchildren will be able to claim that field. So if you should assume that the individual people lost their ownership, so what good is the document? They won't be able to claim the field. When the field will be lost to the Babylonians, so all the private ownership will be canceled, just the Klal Yisrael will own it. So I guess Rav Soloveitchik assumed that that was only a mashal, that the story with Yirmiyah and Achanami, the shtar is not going to help that his grandchildren will be able to claim that field. But the whole idea of buying the field and preserving the shtar was a mashal. That's what Rabbanu Shalom tells Yirmiyah. This is a mashal for the fact that it's a good investment. You shouldn't be concerned. You shouldn't be worried. Eretz Yisrael will be returned to the Jewish people after 70 years. It's not going to be such a long period of time. There'll be people alive in the time of the Bais Rishon to the beginning of the Bais Sheni, 80-year-old people who will remember Eretz Yisrael. So it's not going to be such a long olas. So that's where Moshe Soloveitchik assumed that at the time of the Churban Bais Rishon, there was a Kibush Mochama that did cancel the private ownership of the individual people. The only thing is there, it still belonged to the Klal Yisrael as a whole. So then in the beginning of the Bais Sheni period, we read in Tanakh, it never says that they made a new Chalukah. It says, Losid Lavoi, in the end of Yecheskel, says, Losid Lavoi, there'll be a new Chalukah over Eretz Yisrael. They'll divide it into 13 parts. Instead of 12, for the 12 Shvatim, it says they're going to divide it into 13 parts, and the government will take one thirteenth. Eretz Yisrael for government, for official buildings. So until that time, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik assumed all of Eretz Yisrael has the status of Yerushalayim, and no individual person has any private ownership. So he thought that the Parsha in Chumash, the end of Chumash Vayikra, that speaks about Kisim Karaminko La Misecha, Akodam Yana Misecha, there is an institution of Kinyonim. A person can sell his property. He can sell karka, he can sell metalkalim, kinyon karka, kinyon top. This is only on private individuals. But if Klal Yisrael owns something, so he thought that that doesn't lend itself to mechira. Eretz Yisrael is a morasha. It's not a Yerusha that you can sell it and get rid of it. It's a morasha. You can never shake off your ownership. So he thought that the Eretz Yisrael today doesn't belong to the individual farmers who happen to be living there. It belongs to Klal Yisrael as a whole. And Klal Yisrael don't have the ability. There's no parsha in the Torah that enables Klal Yisrael to sell their property. So he thought the whole Het HaMechir, forget about Het HaMechir. He thought the whole Mechir is not valid. There is no Parsha in the Chumash that enables Klal Yisrael to sell Eretz Yisrael to anybody else. That was quite an idea. According to what he's saying, when the Gemara talks about the fact that in Bais Shein, when the Gemara talks about the fact that the people who lived in the old city of Yerushalayim couldn't charge rent, that means in the Bais Rishon period, they couldn't charge rent. In the Bais Sheni, nobody could charge rent anywhere in Eretz Yisrael. Come on, that's a big chiddush. No one could charge rent anywhere in Eretz Yisrael. Because the whole of Eretz Yisrael is Lanas Chal Kol HaShvatim. When you sell your chametz, how does anybody sell a chametz? So we make six kinyonim. So some of the kinyonim are, we sell to the goy our apartment, and then al yidei kinyon agav, we sell the chametz to the goy. Al yidei kinyon chotzer, sell the chametz to the goy. What do you mean selling your apartment to the goy? That's nicha and chutz lords. But in Eretz Yisrael, they do mechivas chametz also. So they can't sell their house to the goy. No such thing as selling ownership to a goy. All of Eretz Yisrael has the same status as Yerushalayim. Since the times of Churban Bais Rishon, Eretz Yisrael belongs to the Klal Yisrael, and all of Eretz Yisrael doesn't lend itself to selling. So, a very big Kiddush. That was his thought. So that's what the... So it's interesting, Moshe Rabbeinu, when he said the Nevuah v'nasati yosel lachem barashah, years later, 40 years later, when the Benoist Tzolofchot came to ask if they're entitled to get Yerusha, so the Gemara interprets that that was the Suffolk, that was part of their Suffolk, where the Eretz Yisrael already belonged to our forefathers from the days of Avraham Avinu, when he walked around the borders of Eretz Yisrael, he acquired ownership. That was the Kenyan. Well, that was a promise for the distant future. So the Gemara says, when Moshe Rabbeinu delivered the prophecy, he wasn't sure what that meant either. What do you mean he wasn't sure? He was given a dictation word for word and letter for letter. He said over the dictation of Sati Osama Rasha, and he didn't know what it meant. Rabbi Levi Yitzchok Berditchever writes in his Sefer Kedusha Slevi and Chumash, he thinks that true Moshe Rabbeinu was given direct dictation word for word, letter for letter. That's why he says, Zeh HaDavar Shatziv Hashem. This is a direct quotation. That was only when Moshe Rabbeinu was told dinim that anoyeg l'doris, when he's given Torah. When he was given a hayru ashor, like over here, HaKadosh Baruch is telling Moshe Rabbeinu to tell the Jewish people, Hatzesi v'itzalti v'galti v'lakachti, and go speak to Parah. There are no dinim here l'doris. This is all hayru ashor. This is all divrei nevuah. So Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't given a dictation, a direct dictation. He was shown a halom. In Parshas Bahaloyscha, the contrast is given between the voice Moshe Rabbeinu as opposed to Shar Nevi'im. That all the other Nevi'im, it says, Imi and Yirach Me'Hashem Emarei Lo V'Svada B'Chaloy Madaba V'Kodesh Boch appears to them in a dream, and they see a vision, and then they interpret it using their own words. Lo Kein Abdi Moshe B'Chol Beisi Nemenu Pe'al Pe'al Daba Boi. Speak to Moshe Rabbeinu, direct dictation. So that contrast is only Pe'al Pe'al Daba Bo, is only when Moshe Rabbeinu is given Torah Mitzvahs at a Noig L'Doris. Moshe Rabbeinu is given a nevuah about what's going to happen, about the Yitzias Mitzrayim. That's Koyam Arashem. That's not Zeh HaDavar Shatziv Hashem. The Levi Yitzchok Berditchever claims that when he got this based on Kabbalah, that when Moshe Rabbeinu got these nevuahs, it wasn't a direct dictation. When it was time to write it in the Chumash, the Baruch Shalom dictated, write this, write that. The things that Moshe Rabbeinu was dictated to write in the Chumash are not necessarily verbatim what the people said at the time. Let's say they quote what Parah said. Parah said it Beloshna Kodesh. Parah said in the Egyptian. Is it a direct translation from the Egyptian? Not necessarily. The Mefarshim HaChumash point that, the Arachaim and others point that. A lot of times when it says something, the Rabbanu Shalom told Moshe Rabbeinu, write this in Chumash. It may not necessarily be a direct translation from what that person said. It may be summing up what he said. So here, when Moshe Rabbeinu got this prophecy, he's the one who picked the word Morasha. Wasn't that the Rabbanu Shalom dictated to him word for word? What do you mean Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't sure what the usage of the word Marasha? Well, he's the one who decided to use the word Marasha. What did it mean he wasn't sure? So apparently what it means is like this. Moshe Rabbeinu saw a chazon, a chalom, a mara, a nevuah. And he wasn't sure in the mara ha-nevuah what the nature of Eretz. So when the Rabbi Shalom was showing him the mara ha-nevuah, there's going to be a Yetzias Mitzrayim and so on. And Rabbi Shalom said, Nasasi Yasyadi, I swore to give Eretz Yisrael to the Jewish people. I swore to Avos Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov is going to give Eretz Yisrael to the Jewish people. So Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't sure in the Nevuah whether this is going to be a Morasha or a Yerusha. Is going to be an inheritance from the days of Avraham Avinu? Or is it a promise in the distant future? So Moshe Rabbeinu picked on a word that's unclear. Moshe Rabbeinu Bedavka picked the word Morasha, which is unclear, could either have the one meaning or the other. There's such a similar idea that Meiri has on the first Mishnah in Bava Kama. The Mishnah says, "Arbovus nisikin hein shor bar mava and heber." So the Gemara has a machlekes. Rabbi Shmuel was the first generation of Amoraim. They were students of Rabbi Yudah Nasi. Rabbi Yudah Nasi is the one who edited the Mishnayos. So they have a machlekes. What does the word mava mean? When the mava is a had, the mava is a shein. So the Miri is the historical kasha. Rabbi Shmuel was students of Rabbi Yudah Nasi. He was the one who edited the Mishnayos. And when he taught them the Mishnayos, how did Rabbi Yudah Nasi translate the word mava? He didn't translate. He just said mava. No one would ever know what the word mava means. The Gemara quotes Psukim from Tanakh that the word Mav is Hashem, Mav is Ahodim. No one would know what it meant. Rabbi Yudah Nasi must have said what it is. So the Miri, to answer this historical kasha, the Miri in the first Mishnah in Bava Kama makes a suggestion. Along the lines of this suggestion, he says that there must have been two old traditions. That our Bava is Nezikin Hein. And according to one tradition, you include Adam in Keren Shem V'Regel are included in Shor. According to the other tradition, Shor is a... Mabe ze Hashem, Shem Veregel, and Shor ze Hakeren. So there must have been two old traditions. So Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi must have told the students that he's picking a word mave, which could either mean Adam or could mean Shein, because there were two old traditions. So the Machlekes Rabbi Shmuel is, this is how the Miri suggests in the first Mishnah of Baba Kama, Machlekes Rabbi Shmuel is, which of the two old traditions makes more sense? So here also, Moshe Rabbeinu himself says, I'm not sure what the word Marasha means. So if the way Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Berditcheva says that this Nevuah was not dictated word for word to Moshe Rabbeinu, only when HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling him Halachas, was it Pel Pel Dababo, and otherwise it was like Bachaloyma Dababo, like the other Nevi'im. It was Moshe Rabbeinu sometimes got Nevuah Bas Beklori HaMe'ira when it was a Din L'Doros, and sometimes Bas Beklori Sheini Me'ira when it was just a Nevuah L'Hoi Rosho. So Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who picked the word Marasha. So how can he say he's not sure what he meant by it? Unless he say the same, he was shown a Mara HaNevuah, and one aspect of the Nevuah was unclear. So Moshe Rabbeinu picked the word Marasha, which could either mean A or B, because he wasn't sure what the Nevuah is supposed to mean over here. It's an interesting Gemara that Moshe Rabbeinu said by the incident of the Bnei Slavcha, that even though he said Marasha, he's not sure what Marasha meant, whether Marasha means the same as Yerusha or not. On Perek Arvi Psochim, Rashi and the Rashbam both quote from the Talmud Yerushalmi, there are two sources for the background of the Takanas Chachamim of Rabbi Kosis on Pesach night. It's not a Din Men HaTorah, it's a Takanam of the Rabbanim. So one of the suggestions in the Talmud Yerushalmi is that it corresponds to the four Lashon Shel Gula. It says, V'yitzalti v'galti v'lakachti. The question is, it says, V'hevesi, V'hevesi eschem el ho'arsan sh'nasasi siyadu lo sisoso, etc. So why did they only make four cases? They should have made five. Keneged v'hevesi. So some suggest that the Gemara does talk about Kos Chamishi. The Gemara quotes the Brisa and Arvid Psochim. Talks to Reb Tarfon, talks about Kos Chamishi. Rabbi Mendel Kasher in his Haggadah Shleima has a whole chapter about this Kos Chamishi, the whole background, Tadoyim and Rishonim, what everybody has to say. So some say, and then we have an Inyan of a Kosu Shel Eliyo. So some write in Nesvarim that maybe when Eliyo Navi will come and Moshiach will come, then we're going to get Eretz Yisrael for good. Then it's really going to be Ve'heves Yeschem El Ha'aretz. When Yeshua ben Nun came into Eretz Yisrael, was Ve'hevesi, but they knew in advance from the time of the Chet HaMeraglim that they would be sent into Golos. In the Chumash it's not so clear, but that's what it says in Tehillim, and that's what it says in Nevuas Yecheskel HaNavi. On the occasion of the Chet HaMeraglim, they were told that when they'll come to Eretz Yisrael, they won't last, they'll be sent into Golos. When they built the second Beis HaMikdash, also they knew from Beruach HaKodesh from the days of Shlomo HaMelech, based on the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, that the second Beis HaMikdash would not last, that there would be a Churban and the Bayi Sheni, and they would be sent into Golos again. So maybe that's why they never had five curses. But in the days of Eliyahu Navi, when Eliyahu Navi will come, Losi Lodhoi, to announce the coming of Mashiach, that's how the Pasuk says, and the end of Malach, Inenecha Shalech Lechem Eliyahu Navi, Lefnei Boyom Hashem Agor Vahner. So the Gemara Ne'erev and understands Lefnei Boyom Hashem Agor Vahner, first to the day before Bias HaMashiach. Eliyahu Navi will be the next Navi after Malachi. The Gemara understands that Rabban Shalom was angry at Ben Yisrael why they didn't want to come back at the beginning of the period of the Bayi Sheni, because they had permission to come back from Golas Babel. The Ruba stayed behind. So the Rabban Shalom decided he's not going to send any more Nevi'im. He's going to teach us a lesson. But the three Nevi'im he had to send, Chagas Chamelach, he had to send in order that we should be able to build the Beis HaMikdash. Because that's Halacha, you cannot build the Beis HaMikdash without authorization from a Navi. Then the Navi Malachi signs off. He says, Zichu Teres Moshe Avdi, you better observe the Dinim in the Torah. I'm going to be the last Navi till Hele Nechu Shalech Lechem Eseliyah Navi. It's going to be the next Navi. When is he going to come? Day before Bias HaMashiach. Lefnei Boyom Hashem Agol Vaner. The Gemara in Erevin understands it to mean the day before. Day before Moshiach, Eliyahu Navi will come and announce who Mashiach is, to identify who Mashiach is. The Rambam says that when he quotes all these inyanim about Bias HaMashiach in the end of the Sefer, the end of Hilchas Malachim, the whole Mishnah Torah ends with the coming of Mashiach. So the Rambam writes, we're not so sure whether Eliyahu Navi is going to come before that. That's what one Gemara says, other Gemara seem to say contradictory statements. We're not so sure. Yeah. Obviously, the Lubavitcher Chassidim don't think that you need Eliyahu, unless they think the Rebbe was Eliyahu Navi also. I don't know. They think that Moshiach can come before Eliyahu Navi. Yeah. It's interesting why the Rambam wrote a whole sefer and he ends off with the coming of Mashiach. That's what one of the Chassidish Rebbes said, that the Rambam was a descendant from the Malchus Beis David, and he was right to become the Melech HaMashiach, but the door wasn't roy lekach. So that's why Min HaShemayim, they thought with that they wrote Hasogas, the Rabbi wrote Hasogas, the Ramach and other Rishon wrote Hasogas to pull down the work, the Chshivas of the work on the Mishnah Torah. And this Mishnah Torah was intended initially by the Rambam to be the constitution of Medina Yisrael. So he writes all the dinim, and he ends off with the coming of Mashiach. That the whole work is leading up to the coming of Mashiach. That's what one of the Chassidish Rebbe's suggested. Maybe that's why the Lubavitcher Rebbe instituted the learning of Rambam, because he thought we're holding by Mashiach. Whatever it is, so that's what some suggest, that the Kos Shel Eliyahu is really the Kos Chamishi, that Lasi Lavoi, when it will really be the Heves, he has Kamal Ha'aretz. It won't be like in the days of Yeshua ben Nun, that they knew from the very outset, they knew already from the time of the Chet HaMeraglim that Eretz Yisrael, that they would be sent into Golus. They wouldn't hold on to Eretz Yisrael forever. And at the beginning of the Bais Sheni, also the Gemara says in Yom, in the first page, they knew from day number one, because hardly anybody showed up, so they knew that Eretz Yisrael would be lost again a second time. So maybe when Ve'heves Yeschem El Ha'aretz will be fulfilled, then we'll have Kois Chamishi, then we'll have five Koises. That's what some suggest. There's a professor here, Professor Aaron Levine. He teaches economics. He's my first cousin. So he's named after his grandfather, who was killed by the Nazis. He was the Rav of Reisha. Reisha is a big city. The airport is in Reisha. When I came back from Eastern Europe 2 years ago, so the whole airport is too by nothing, but that's an airport. So the airport is in Reisha. The Polish pronounce it Reisha. Everybody else pronounces it Reisha. So he has a sefer on his grandfather. Baron Levine has a sefer on Chumash Hadrash VeHoyim. So this is one of his, he has beautiful ideas. This is one of his suggestions, that maybe the Kos Chamishi will be required Lasi Lavoi. Maybe they're really five Lashana Shel Geula. We don't celebrate, we don't drink a fifth Kos, because the fifth promise wasn't yet fulfilled. Ve'heves Yeschem El Ha'aretz wasn't fulfilled in its entirety. Nesati Osa Lechem Barashem means we're going to keep it forever. So maybe that's why we don't have a Kos Chamishi now. And maybe Limos HaMashiach, that'll be the Kos Shel Eliyahu. When Eliyahu Navi will come, then we'll have the Kos Chamishi. It's usually assumed differently. It's usually assumed that the reason why you only have Dalad L'Shana Shel Geula and we discount Ve'heveisi is because the Geula was completed before they came to Eretz Yisrael. Because the Ramban Al HaTorah writes that in the Hakdamah to Chumash Shmos, he writes that the Sefer Shmos is a Sefer that deals with the first Golus and the Geula Mimeno. And the Geula was completed at the end of Vayakol Pikudei with the building of the Mishkan. That even before they entered Eretz Yisrael, the Geula was already completed. And now we have Eretz Yisrael, but we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, so we don't have a real Geula. Geula means when you have a Beis HaMikdash. Why so? So he says, because in the days of the Ovis, Ramban writes in his Hagnomah to Shmos, in the days of the Ovis, they had, and he's paraphrasing a Loshon from a Pasuk in Iyov, in Sefer Iyov. The whole Ramban al HaTorah is very often paraphrasing the Lashonis from Tanakh. That's why it's important. It's a very flowery style. It's important to have a volume of the Ramban where they give you the Marmakaimus to know where the phrases come from. Otherwise, you don't know why in the world did the Ramban write such a funny Lashon. The answer is that most of the time he's using biblical expressions. So here he uses an expression that appears in Sefer Yehov, that in the days of Avram Yitzchak Yankov, they had Ashuas Hashchina, and they had what he refers to based on the Pasuk Ganiv, Sod Elaka Aleya Halehem. That Ashuas Hashchina. When they left Eretz Yisrael, they went down to Mitzrayim, they lost this Ashuas Hashchina. Hashchina is not Shoreh in Chutz Lortz. So then it was restored, the Geula would be when they restored back to that Pchina of Hashuas Hashchina. So he said they didn't have to come back to Eretz Yisrael once they built the Mishkan, and the Mishkan was Malei Shchina. So he says when you get to the end of Chumash Shmos, and you learn by Yaakov Pikudah, they already built the Mishkan, so that is the Geula. And today we return back to Eretz, so we don't have a Hashuas Hashchina, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, so it's not yet the full Geula. So that's usually assumed to be the reason why we don't have five Kaisis. Aren't there five Lashon Shel Geula? So usually the answer is given not the way the Reisha Rav said. Usually the answer is given the Heveisi Eschem El Ha'aretz. That's a separate thing. The Geula was completed before they returned back to Eretz Yisrael. Once they had the Mishkan, that was the Geula. Baruch Shalom keeps on telling Moshe Rabbeinu that the purpose of the makis is v'idaitem ki ani Hashem. Rav Hashem is going to make leman revos mofsai b'eretz Mitzrayim. He wants to make a lot of nisim that the Jewish people should recognize all of the, should realize all of the ikori ha'amuna. And Lamai said that's true. There's a mitzvah of zechiras yitzias Mitzrayim. We should remember yitzias Mitzrayim because on the occasion of yitzias Mitzrayim, waiting through the whole year, the Gemara said the Tosefta and Saita says that the Esa Makas took a whole year long. Moshe Rabbeinu would give a hasra for 3 weeks to warn them. You better send the Jewish people free or they're going to suffer. And then the Makkah itself often took 7 days. So each Makkah, there was Esa Makas, each Makkah took a whole month, so that's 10 months. And there was a pause in between, a little here and there. So the Gemara has the Tosefta and Saita says that, like Mishpat Rishoyim B'Gehenim is Yud Beis Chodesh, the maximum people suffer in Gehenna is 12 months. So the Tosefta says that the Mitzrayim were punished to the maximum, that they suffered for a full 12 months. From the beginning of Dam, it's Friday, until the end, the Makas B'charis took 12 months. So in one sense, the Esa Makas were a punishment to the Bnei Yisrael, to the punishment to the Mitzrayim, because of the fact that they were so mean to the Jewish people. And the punishment was divided up among the different people to different degrees. It says, when they were punished, so it says, "Bucho be'amecha." How does it say? "Vesharas ha'yor tzvardi ve'olam be'beisecha al mitzvays avadecha be'amecha v'tanerecha v'misharisecha." She, each one was to a different degree. Paro was punished more than his cabinet. The cabinet was punished more than the rest of the people, and the rest of the people punished less. Each one suffered to a different degree because this was a punishment. That's what the Medrash says over here. So in the one sense, the Esa Makas were a punishment. Then in another sense, the Esa Makas were for the purpose of making nisim, l'man teidu ki ani Hashem b'kerev ha'aretz, and so on, to demonstrate all of the ikari v'emunah. So they recognize that there is a power, there is an invisible power in the world that God exists, that God knows what's happening, and He cares, and He rewards the tzaddikim, and He punishes the rishoyim. And that there is such a thing of Torah min HaShemayim, the Rabbanu Shalom at that time, at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, gave them mitzvahs. He cares about the way people act. And so on and so forth, all of the Ikar Emunah. And the Emunah B'yos HaMashiach means that the Rabbanu Shalom created the world for a goal, for a purpose. Just like over here, there was a purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So too, the whole world is going to lead to a whole tachlis. The tachlis of the whole B'yos HaOlam. The Rabbanu Shalom didn't create a world levatola. It's a tremendous miracle to create a world yesh me'ayin. So to do a miracle that's a waste, to create a world the way it is now, it looks like the Rabbanu Shalom wasted his effort and his energy. The whole world is ready to collapse. So it must be, we believe, that the Rabbanu Shalom is going to make a gula. He's going to redeem the whole world. The whole world is going to have a purpose in being created. So all of the Ikari Emunah were demonstrated on the occasion of the Esa Makas. These were the two purposes of the Makas. The Pesukim say, "L'man teidu ki ein kamoni b'chol ha'aretz." And also all of the Makas were a punishment to the Mitzrayim. Rashi in the beginning of Parshas Tzav quotes from the Tanoim, "Ein loshen tzav el loshen ziris biyad ledoiris." The word tzav, mitzvah, tzivo, has a technical connotation. It's only used when there's a din that applies with dirt. That's how the Rambam writes in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, that you only include in the minyan of the Taryag Mitzvahs a mitzvah which is nehekes ledoiris. Something is only harashos, so it doesn't belong in the minyan. Mitzvahs, as for example, they were told to knock on, last week said results, they were told to knock on the next door neighbor's doors, and there are Pesach, in Eskor Matonis, Vishwali Shemishchenta, Migores, basically, Cheselech Leizol. So that's not included in the minyan of mitzvahs, that was only harashos. So here in the parasha, the word siva appears twice. And we don't see exactly what the din l'doris is. Everything in today's parsha is all history, is all hayrasha. So once it says that Moshe and Aharon did took the stick and he threw it on the ground, turned into a tannin, then it turned the chazik, he held it in his hand, turned back into a stick, and it swallowed up the sticks of the other midstream. What, this is a din l'doris? The whole thing is only hayrasha, a miracle. So why does it say Moshe Rabbeinu asked Kasha Tziva Hashem Oysam? Why does he use the expression Tziva over there? Vayasuchein here in Perek Zayin Pasuk Chof. Vayasuchein Moshe V'Yaron Kasha Tziva Hashem. What do you mean Kasha Tziva Hashem? So I thought maybe what it means is there is a din l'daris, the Rambam calls in Hilchas Yisrael HaTorah. There is a din when a Navi comes and he gives a nevuah, so the people are not supposed to listen to the Navi unless he gives an also moface. He has to demonstrate, he has to prove his credentials. So if we already know from the past that he's a Navi Mukhzah, he doesn't have to prove every time he gives a new nevuah, he doesn't have to keep on proving again with another Isa Mavis. But at least the first time when he begins his career, he has to establish himself as an Avi Mukhzah. So the din requires he has to give an Osim Mavis. The Rambam says, in Ilchus Yisrael, he may be a faker, he may be pulling off a fast one and may be fooling us into believing that he's a Navi, he really isn't. But he says, what can you do? That's the halacha. The halacha says, if to the best of our understanding, and it seems to be an awesome office, he says something. So he's supposed to listen to him on the assumption that he's a Navi Emes. The Rambam writes, sometimes you can have two witnesses testify that someone murdered, that someone was Mechal Shabbos, you want to give the death penalty, it turned out that they were Eide Sheker. So he says, the Torah says you rely on two Eidim. So to over here, the Torah says you rely on what appears to be an awesome office, even though the fellow knows maybe the guy knows chemistry, maybe he's pulling the wool over their eyes. So nonetheless, that's halach. So maybe that's over here. Maybe it's called Kasha Tziv Hashem because it is a din l'doris. They were observing the din l'doris that a Navi has to establish himself as a Navi Mukhzah. That's a Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Peites. The Gemara says, how did Yitzchok allow Avraham Avinu to almost kill him? The end of the story was that he didn't kill him. He shechted the keves. But how did Yitzchok in the first place allow Avraham Avinu to tie him up knowing that his father's going to kill him? He should have stuck his father in the face. He should have run away. So the answer is, Yitzchok knew that his father was a Navi Mukhzah. He had demonstrated Osisim Ofsim on earlier occasions. So once a person is established as a Navi Mukhzah Shiny, once he's established as a Navi Mukhzah, he doesn't have to give an Osim Ofis each time. So as a Navi Mukhzok, so he had to believe him. That's a special namanus that a Navi has. So maybe that's the pshat in the pasuk. But then you have, there's another pasuk where it says again, it says when the Ribbono Shel Olam sent Moshe and Aharon to speak to Bnei Yisrael, it says, Vayitzaveim al Bnei Yisrael. What does that mean? Here in chapter Vav, Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vaydab Hashem al Moshe ve'al Aharon Vayitzaveim al Bnei Yisrael Ve'al Paro Melchatam L'hotziz Bnei Yisrael Me'eretz Mitzrayim. The last Pasuk in the first Aliyah today. What do you mean Vayitzaveim al Bnei Yisrael? Vayitzaveim, if Tzivu according to the Tanoim has a connotation of Ein Loshen Tzavot Loshen Ziris Biyara L'doros, so what mitzvah L'doros are you talking about over here? So the Torah Tamima quotes, the Achranim quote this, Yerushalmi Maseches Rosh Hashanah, Bnei Yisrael at this occasion were given a mitzvah haneheges l'doros, they were given the mitzvah of shiluach avodim. That's why it says vayitzaveim, they were given some mitzvah, not just vayitzaveim lehotzis bnei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim, that you wouldn't use the verb tzifo then. They were given a mitzvah haneheges l'doros. So how do you know which mitzvah? So that's what the Tanoim thought, it must have been the mitzvah of shiluach avodim. They were slaves, and they were hoping that someday they would go free. So the Baruch Shalom told them, kindalach, you're suffering now. Someday you're going to be free. Don't forget that you were suffering as slaves. I'm telling you a din of Shiloh Havodim. When you're going to have slaves later on, you have to set the slaves free. So Nebedivri, you have to set them free after Sheish, and when it comes Yoivam. The Pesukim say in Yirmiyah that the Jewish people violated these dinim. That's what caused the Churban Bais Rishon. One of the dinim that they violated was Shiloh Havodim. They didn't remember to observe the din.
Was Nebedivri Hal yet? You can't have Nebedivri
right, but they were told in advance that there is going to be an institution of slavery. Rabbi Chalap told me he was going to speak on Martin Luther King Day about slavery, the Torah attitude. He used to teach before he became the Menahel of the Shul. He used to teach American history here, so that's why they chose him to give the guest talk that covered Martin Luther King Day. The Torah does talk about slavery. There is a parsha in the Torah of slavery. Then you have, it's a strange, the parsha, Ela Rosha Beis Avosim, you have Reuben, Shimon, Levi. It goes until Moshe Aaron, then it conks out. So what is this all about? So Rashi quotes from the Medrash, Itoch Sheuska Kaliachel Shifta Shalevi Ad Moshe V'Aaron, Bishvil Moshe V'Aaron. The Torah has to tell us what the Yichus of Moshe V'Aaron is. So Aga Moshe V'Aaron. So the Torah gives you the whole Yichas Reuben Shimon Levi till you get to Levi Moshe V'Aaron. Then you don't need any more. So what do you need in the first place? B'toch Shehuska Kliyaches Shifta Shalevi Moshe V'Aaron. And why do you need? Pray tell. Why do you need that? Why do you have to know the Yichas of Moshe V'Aaron? So it must be that on this occasion, that's where Avvelvela Soloveitchik and the Or Sameach and the Meshech Chochma, they both point out the same shot. In the first parsha, in Parsha Shmois, HaKadosh Baruch Hu just tells Moshe Rabbeinu to go do a nevuah, go deliver a nevuah to the Bnei Yisrael that he's going to let them go free, a shlichus. In today's parsha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is appointing Moshe V'Aaron to a position of leadership. So that we have a, and that's why Moshe Rabbeinu turns it down again. Moshe Rabbeinu here. He doesn't want to go. He was punished. In last week said he was punished for saying the same taina. So he keeps on saying the same thing. He's not afraid he's going to be punished. How come he wasn't punished in this sedra? So the Medrash has two opinions. We usually assume that in this sedra he was not punished. How come? He was punished for saying this last week. In last week's sedra. So that's what the Meshech Chochma and Rav Elvela Soloveitchik both say. No, in last week's sedra, he wasn't appointed to a position of sorority. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to go deliver a nevuah. So if someone asks you to do a mitzvah and you turn it down, so you deserve a punishment. But in this week's sedra, he was appointed to a position of sorority. So then the Gemara says that Derech Eretz dictates, you should turn it down, you should say, I'm not worthy. That's what the Meshech Chochma points up. When they call you for an aliyah, so you have to run right away. You don't wait till they ask you a third time. When the Gabbai ask you to serve as the Shlech Tzibur, so then the Gemara says, if you run right away, it shows that you're very arrogant. You should turn it down the first two times until the Gabbai asks you the third time, then you should go. What's the difference between an Aliyah? Why don't you turn down the Aliyah also the first two times and only go the third time? The Gemara says, no. Mishinosin l'sefer Torah likas v'ino koire. The Gemara says, shloshet dvorim, I forgot the Loshon HaMar. They punish you for three things. I'm going to die earlier. So one of them is they call you for an aliyah and you don't want to take the aliyah. And if they ask you to serve as the Shliach Tzibur, how come over there Derech Eretz dictates you should turn it down? So the Meshech Chochma says the answer is the Shliach HaTzibur is the representative of the Tzibur. So he has to be somebody super, he has to be somebody special. So Derech Eretz dictates you should turn it down the first two times. Say, I'm not worthy. And they are also a son. Give some kind of an excuse why you're not worthy. Even though you think that you're God's gift to humanity, but you should have the humility to turn it down the first two times till Gabbai insists the third time. But for an aliyah, they're not appointing you as the Rosh Kibahak, just telling you to take an aliyah. To take an aliyah. So that you should run. So last week said Reb Moshe Rabbeinu was punished because he keeps on refusing to do the shlichas that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants him to do. He wasn't appointed to any position of Sarara. But in this week said Reb, he was appointed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is appointing him and Aaron to a position of Sarara, so that's why Derech Eretz dictates he should turn it down. So he did the right thing in this week's Sarah. Now Soloveitchik pointed out that on Simchas Torah, when we give Chasen Torah, Chasen Bereshis, so we have a long hazmona. When we call upon the Chasen Torah, the Chasen Bereshis to take the Aliyah, so we say Amod, then we say again Amod, then we say Amod, Amod, Amod. You say, I think, five times or six times, they say Amod. Till he finally calls the fellow up to get the aliyah. So he said, why is that? Because the Gemara says, the Shmoneh Psukim Shabbat Torah Yochid Kari Yosam. The last aliyah, that's Chasen Torah. So Yochid Kari Yosam, what does it mean, Yochid? So there are different interpretations in the Rishonim. So the Ramor in Hilchas Simchas Torah quotes one pshat from the Mordechai, Yochid means Yochid HaMyuchad, that you give the aliyah of Chasen Torah to the biggest Hamachachim, to the rabbi. Usually give it to the rabbi in the shul. So that's really giving Chasen Torah to someone. That's a big kibbutz. So Derech Eretz should dictate that he should turn it down, whoever you give it to. So that's why you have to say three times, Amod, 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 Amod. You say five times or six times. You say many times. Because there the Derech Eretz should dictate that he should turn it down until he asks him three times. In fact, he asks three times. But for any other aliyah, not.
Let's say every Shabbos, the Gabbai asks you one time. With 100 Shabbos, 50 Shabbos in the year, he keeps asking, is that called 50 times or is one time?
Well, he asked the Davin for an Amid.
Yeah.
I don't know. The Gemara seems to say that Derech Eretz dictates you should turn it down a little bit the first two times. And he should ask you the third time. The Gemara says the first time you turn it down, the second time you turn it down, you start to move a little bit. Then the third time, you take it.
So the one time. But if it's the next Shabbat, he asks you once, you turn it down, he goes to the next one. And the next Shabbat, he asks you.
Unless you're the Chazan Kavua. unless you're the best one in the shul, you have the best voice, and everybody enjoys the way you daven better than other people. So then they already know that you're the best one. So you've already turned it down enough times. But if there is a whole pool of people that they can get, and he's asking you, so then the Archaeus dictates you should turn it down the first two times. Yeah. So that's what Avelbel explains, that because in Parshas Va'era, Bodaber Palamer Mitzrayim means HaKadosh Baruch Hu is appointing Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron to a position of Sarare. So the Gemara has a rule in Sanhedrin that he can only be Memana, a person, to a position of Sarare if he's a Meyuchas. How does it say? V'yisyatzu Sham Imach in Parshas Baal Oistcha, when the Shivim Zikanim were chosen, so it says V'yisyatzu Sham Imach. So the Gemara says Imach means B'doimim Loch, that the 70 members of the Sanhedrin should be similar, the 70 Ziknei Ha'edah should be similar to Moshe Rabbeinu. In what way? That just like Moshe Rabbeinu is a Miyuchas, so too they should be Miyuchasim. And who said, pray tell that Moshe Rabbeinu had to be a Miyuchas in order to be appointed to a position of Sarara? So the answer is, that's why it says the Yichas over here in Parshas Be'era. Mitoch Shehuska Kliach and Shifta Shal Levi Ad Moshe V'Yaron, because they were appointed now to a position of Sarara. So in order to have a position of Sarara, it says when you appoint a melech, son tosim lach a melech mikera vachecha tosim lach a melech losuch lasa lach yishnach reishalo echichahu. You're not allowed to appoint, the Gemara is not allowed to appoint a ger to a position of Sarara over Yisraelim. You can appoint a ger to a position of Sarara over Gerim, but you can't appoint a ger to a position of Sarara over Yisrael. It has to be a miyuchos. So here it says the yichos of Moshe and Aharon, because it was at this time that they were appointed to a position of Sarara. Ramban has a few times on today's Sedra, I think he has more than once, he refers you to the pasuk in the end of Mishlei. The pasuk in the end of Mishlei says, "Pal gemaim le melech b'yad Hashem, kol she yachbetz yatenu." The Rabban Shalom says here, "Vani achbidas le paro." Later, after the first five makas, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says he's going to see to it that Paro is not going to let the Bnei Yisrael go free. So the Ramban refers you to that pasuk at the end of Mishlei, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu controls everyone's hearts. Everyone has a restricted b'chiruch. Everybody has b'chiruch avshus, but everyone's b'chiruch avshus is restricted. You have no ability to kill someone who's totally innocent. Everyone has a limited b'chiruch avshus. So one is in a position of sarara, like a melech, even has a bigger restriction. He's practically in prison. He's practically shackled. There was a free man who was sworn in the other day as president of the United States, and now he became an eved. Now he lost his, he came out, lost his whole career of options. All of his decisions now are going to be, all the shots are going to be called Ben HaShemayim. Yeah. So the Gemara says, how come some presidents go down in history as good presidents and others go down as bad presidents if everything is Ben HaShemayim? So the answer the Gemara gives is, Megalgal M'schus Alei Deizaka V'choy V'adeichai Ben HaShemayim. If they want to punish the people, so they'll pick a rotten person, a person who has a bad reputation, a Russia, and they'll have him do the shlichas lira. And if they, Min HaShemayim, they want to do wonderful things, happy things, cheerful things with the nation, so then they'll pick a tzaddik, to do megaglim schus like deizak, they'll pick a tzaddik, he should be the shliach for the Rabban Shalom to do the good things. So some presidents, some heads of state go down in history as tzaddikim, some as rishayim. Lemaisa, the decisions that they made as heads of state were not biyodom, but the fact that they were chosen in HaShemayim as the shlich to do ra is an indication it must have been an adam rasha. Or the fact that his decisions were to do a davatay for the people, it must be that the megaglam schusai deizak, it must have been a tzarek. So the Ramban refers you to that pasuk in the end of Mishlei. Pal gemayim, like a tiny stream of water. The heart of the king in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is like a tiny stream of water. If you want to divert a river, you got to get a whole team of engineers to figure out how to do it. You just have a stream of water. If you just put your hand there, the water will be diverted. 1, 2, 3. That's the phrase that the Ramban quotes. It's a big problem. The Ramban raises it in his commentary on Chumash, and the Rambam in the Hilchos Tshuva raises it, and the Rambam raises the issue in the Shemoneh Prokhim, the 8th. Of the Shemoneh Prokhim. Shiva Bachim don't know what the Shemoneh Prokhim are. The Rambam wrote a commentary, Pirush HaMishnayos. So as a hakdama to the commentary, Masechah Sovos, he wrote an introduction that has, for lack of a better name, it's known as the Shmeina Prakim LaRambam. It's an introduction which has 8 chapters. In the 8th chapter, he talks about this topic. How come the Mitzrayim, how come Paro was punished for not letting Bnei Yisrael free after the Bnei Shalom said he's not Ani Akshay Slay Paro? Wasn't it his fault? So the Rambam explains what he thinks is the answer, that there's such a concept as Menias HaTshuva as a punishment. Sometimes a person did so many averes, so part of his punishment is going to be that the Rebbe Shalom will suspend his Bechir Chavshis and won't permit him to do tshuva. So he's not really punished for the additional averes that he did after his Bechir Chavshis is suspended and he can't choose to do taiva. He's punished for the averes that he did before that point, at which time he did have Bechir Chavshis. The Ramban writes something very similar, not the same in today's sentence. Here's a problem with Moshe Rabbeinu last week and this week. He says he doesn't want to be the shliach for the Rabban Shalom. He doesn't want the whole job. Ani aral svasai. What does it mean, ani aral svasai? So some of the Rishonim say he ran away from Midian. He ran away from Mitzrayim so many years earlier. He stayed in Midian so many years. He doesn't speak Egyptian well. I'm a foreigner, so it's not good. You need a politician who knows how to speak the Mitzri language better than me. I don't speak well. We usually assume that that's not what it means. We usually assume Anir Asfasayim means that he didn't speak well. Whatever language he did speak, he didn't speak well. The Medrash says that he burnt his tongue. Whatever the story is, the Pashup Shat was that he didn't speak well. The stock is strange. Why did Rabban Shalom choose a Balmum that he should be the shliach for the Geula? So the Ran has a famous drasha, the drasha Saran. He says that if Moshe Rabbeinu would have been a good speaker, so one might have perhaps thought that the Jewish people fell for his baloney because of his oratory. He's such a good speaker; he can convince you of anything. Rabbi Soloveitchik was a very good speaker. So Rabbi Gerelich used to complain about that. He can convince you of anything. Like the Ran in the Drasha says that the Rabban Shalom chose Moshe Rabbeinu because Moshe Rabbeinu, when he was talking about the weather, about everything else, about politics, he couldn't talk straight. He was aral svasayim. When he spoke Torah, it was clear that Shechina medaberes mitoch rona, because he spoke with a booming voice, a loud voice, and he spoke clearly without any stuttering, without any speech impediment. Whatever the impediment was that he had all year long, when he's saying over the Divrei Torah, he didn't have that problem. So that's how the people were so convinced that Rishchina medaberes mitokman. So the Ran says that's the reason why the Rabbanu Shalom Bedavkit chose an Aral Sosan. It's interesting. Yeah, Rashi and Chumash quotes the comment from the Gemara that you have two psukim where it says that Moshe and Aaron were sent to do the shlichus, and one pasuk Aaron's name is mentioned first. Who Aaron and Moshe Shemar Hashem Lahem Atzius Meisam Beretz Mitzrayim Hei Mam Dabar and Par Merach Mitzrayim Leisam Beretz Mitzrayim. Who Moshe be Aaron? That's in chapter Vav. Two psukim, one next to the other. Psukim Chavav and Chavzayin. So in pasuk Chavav says Aaron before Moshe. Pasuk Chavzayin says Moshe before Aaron. So Rashi quotes from the Gemara Lam Doch Sheshkulim Hei, that they were equal. What do you mean they're equal? Moshe and Aaron are equal. Means that we needed both of them for the Yetzias Mitzrayim purposes. Some of the Mefarshim point out that there's a difference in the two psukim. In the pasuk where Aaron's name appears first, it says Lohotiz Bnei Yisrael Me'eretz Mitzrayim, to leave. That's the political freedom to leave Eretz Mitzrayim. The next pasuk where it has Moshe Rabbeinu's name first, it says Lohotiz Bnei Yisrael Mitzrayim. Doesn't mean the political freedom from Eretz Mitzrayim to leave. Mitzrayim means the culture of Mitzrayim. So for that, Moshe Rabbeinu was more important than Moshe Rabbeinu was giving the Torah. So Moshe Rabbeinu's success outshone that of his activity in that area. But let's say it's without me Mitzrayim, from the culture of Mitzrayim, yeah, Moshe was greater than Aaron. And in the political aspect, Aaron's accomplishment was greater than Moshe, because Aaron was the miturgamon for Moshe Rabbeinu. When they went to Paro, basically Aaron was the one who was doing all the talk. Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't speak well. We needed both. The Yetzias Mitzrayim was a political Yetzias Mitzrayim for Eretz Mitzrayim, and it was a total break with the whole tradition. They were living there with the culture of Mitzrayim for all those years. The Medrash says when it came to Kriyas Yamsuf, the Yam didn't want to split, so the Yam said, "Why should I split? Halolo Abdi Abedizar, Halolo Abdi Abedizar." They worshipped the same Abedizar. They were all involved together. The Jews were involved with the same culture as the non-Jews. They retained their identity. They were different from the Mitzrim, Shalashina Shmam, Lashanim Al Busham, but in mitzvahs they were not keeping any mitzvahs. So that's why there was a need not only for the Yitziyah from Eretz Mitzrayim, there was a need for Yitziyah from Mitzrayim, in the sense to leave the culture of Mitzrayim. Rashi quotes from the Medrash that the well that you drank from Be'er D'shosis Minei, you shouldn't throw any stones in that well. You should show Hakoras HaToiv. So Moshe Rabbeinu was saved by the water. As a little baby, they put him in a little Tevas Goyman, and he was saved on the water. And then he owed a debt of gratitude to the land, because when he killed the Mitzri, he buried him in the sand. So the first six makas that had to do with the water and with the earth, those were done by Aaron. And starting from the seventh on, that Moshe Rabbeinu participated. Moshe Rabbeinu shouldn't participate in the first six, because Be'er D'shos Hizmenei Le'tishdi Be'Avonim. I forgot what the Lashon is. Yeah, what do you mean? You have Hakoras HaTov to an inanimate object. You have Hakoras HaTov to people who have Bechira Chavshis to do good things to you. So you should sense gratitude towards them. What do you mean Hakoras HaTov to the sand and Hakoras HaTov to the water? So Mestama, what it means is that we should practice. We should practice even on a bor that you drank from. We should practice on water, practice Hakoras HaTov on the sand, so that when it comes to a human being who did us a taiva, we should certainly observe the real. The real Hakoras HaTov is towards people. You have such a concept. The Rishonim have a practice that when you say Kiddush over a cup of wine, so you cover over the chalas on the table. So different reasons are given in Tosis for this. So one of the reasons, a very agadic reason, is shaliyur hapas b'yishosoy, that the chalas shouldn't be embarrassed. It shouldn't be humiliated. Because the din is when you have a whole bunch of foods, chitu sarav gefen and teinu v'rim and zayis udvash, we have all the shivas aminim. You're interested in tasting all of them. So there's a seder kedima. Unless there is a Seder Kedima, unless we know that first comes the fruit cup, and then comes the soup, and then comes the fish, and then comes whatever, the vegetable salad, and then comes the main course. But if there's no Seder Kedima, so the halacha gives you a Seder Kedima, in accordance with the way the fruits, the Shivas HaMinim, are mentioned in the Chumash. So the din is that if you have bread and you have wine, so you're supposed to have Moitzi on the bread first, and then Bar Piyagofen on the wine afterwards. So when we say Bar Piyagofen on the wine first, it's really an insult to the bread, because the bread should come first. So that's why we cover over the bread. Shalir hapas b'shosa. You shouldn't feel humiliated. What do you mean? The bread is going to cry. The bread is not a person. It doesn't feel humiliated. So it means we should practice on inanimate things, so that when it comes to a human being, we should be careful not to hurt his feelings. Even on inanimate things, there's some people, they'll only show hakaras hatov to the well. To another human being. No, that's competition. They won't show any hakaras hatov. The Hakoras HaTov to the well and to the sand and to the body of water is by way of practice towards the real thing. Rashi quotes in the Medrash. Most of what Rashi writes on Chumash is all quoting from Midrashim and Gemaras. Rashi quotes in the Medrash that when Moshe Rabbeinu sees Paro, so he says, "You're going to have to let the Jewish people free. I'm going to bring Makkas. But you are to call Avadecha Ein Alai. Your cabinet, your assistants are going to come and plead with me that we should leave Eretz Mitzrayim." So the truth of the matter was, it wasn't Yor D'Kol Avadecha Elai. It was Yor Arata Ato. Par himself was the one who chased after Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu said, Loshen Kovet, he didn't want to be Mevazah the king. So you have to be Noi Kovet, even though Par Melech Mitzrayim is a Rosha. That's the Loch. You have to show Kovet La Malchus, even if the Malchus is a Melech Rosha. There is a Yerushalmi, I think it's a Megillah, that the Marsham quotes, that this din that you have to show kovet to the melech, even if he's the melech rosha, is only b'chayov. After he dies, then you don't have to show kovet. That's how some farim for the tour is kasha against the Rambam. The Rambam writes in Hilchas Mamrim all the dinim of Kibud Aviyim, and then he writes that the din of Kibud Aviyim even applies if the parents are Rishoyim. So the Torah asks, isn't this against the Gemara? The Gemara has in the first daf in his own Neshech that if the father died and the father left the whole Yerusha and he got the money by lending beribis, he used to charge ribis to other people. So the Gemara says that the children should return the ribis mishum Kibud Av, that people shouldn't continue to say after the father died, oh, the children are wealthy because the father charged the ribis. They should give back all the ribis to cover up on the avera of the father. So the Gemara is the kasha, what do you mean? Kibud Av for a man who lent money by ribis. So there is no din of Kibud Av. That's the Gemara's kasha. So the Gemara says he did tshuva, didn't have a chance to give it back. The Gemara says, what kind of tshuva? If you do tshuva, but on the chaver, the first step is you have to give back the money. Calls him out, you don't give back the money, the tshuva is not meaningful. Gemara says, yeah, he did tshuva and he had in mind, he really wanted to give back all the money, and he died before he had a chance to. So the tour in Hilchas Kibud Aviyim, Simur Resh Mem, in the end of Yeridaya, quotes that Gemara that it seems to contradict the Rambam. So the Achrayim suggest different truths. Some Achrayim want to say this chiluk, just like the Yerushalmi, drew a distinction between Bechaye HaMelech and Lachamis HaMelech. As far as the Melech Rosha, so perhaps the same is true regarding Kibud Aviyim, that Bechaye of the Zanin of Kibud Av, even if the father, even if the parents are Rishoyim. And Lachamisa, there's only a need of Kibud Av if they're not Rishoyim. Why should there be a difference? So the Hezba is not so difficult to understand. There is a discussion in Achrayim regarding the nature of the din of Kibud Aviyim. The Menachas Chinuch has and the Maram Shik has a discussion halacha lemaisa. Is this a mitzvah shebinonim lachaver? Is this a mitzvah shebinonim lamokon? My nafkemina. So the Menachas Chinuch has a nafkemina. Let's say if a person violates a mitzvah shebinonim lachavero, somebody when it finally dawns upon him, it may never dawn upon him. When he finally dawns upon him that he should do tshuva. So it's not enough he should clap al chet and speak to Rabban Shalom and his vidui. Has to apologize to the person, has to beg forgiveness from the person from whom he ba'avled. So that's the question. Let's say a person treated his parents like strangers. Treats his parents like their next door neighbor. He's not mevazen them, he doesn't insult them, but he doesn't go out of his way to treat them nicely. So the way Kibud Av requires. So is that only an aver bin adam lamakom? Why bin adam lamakom? So the Menachas Chinuch quotes the Gemara Kiddushin. Shloshi shutvim yesh ba'adam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the father and the mother, and the Rabbanu Shalom knows that he's invisible, so it's hard to show kavod to him. So the Rabbanu Shalom says, if you'll show kavod to your parents, I'll consider it as if you showed kavod to me. And if you're mezalzel in the kavod of your parents who were there, so I'll consider it as if you were mezalzel in my kavod. So maybe showing kavod to the parents is indirectly a method of showing kavod to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's where the Menachas Chinuch is not sure whether the mitzvah of Kibud Aviyim is a mitzvah bin Adam lamakom, that the parents are shutvim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, shlosh shutvim yesh ba'adam, and by showing kavod to the parents, we indirectly are considered showing kavod to the shutvim, to Rabban Shalom, or maybe it's a mitzvah bin Adam lachavera, to show a debt of gratitude, to express the gratitude towards the parents. So he talks about tshuva, the Maram Shik talks about other nafkaminas, what about mechila? What if the parents are meichel? The parents say, we're meichel and keep it out forever. Can the parents change their mind after 40 years? They decide they're already 80 years old. And now they can use little assistance from the children. So the children say, but you were meichel 40 years ago. You said, you're meichel and keep it out. You don't want it. So the parents said, we're meichel, yeah, but now from now on, we do want keep it out. So if it's a shibud bin adam lachavero, so the Maram Shik says, if you're meichel, you're meichel. If it's really a din bin adam lamakim, if keep it out is bin adam lamakim, so why do the parents have the ability to be meichel in the first place? If they're not the balabatim on the kibbutz, and the answer is ritzon shaladim zeh kvodo, they just are the bialim to determine what's kovet. They can't be oike the chi of kovet. It's bedonim lamokim. They can just be koveya what acts of service constitute kibbutz and what not. So they said we don't want you to show us any kovet. They're angry at the child. Say we don't want it. We don't expect any kovet for the rest of our lives. But then later on, 40, 50 years later, they changed their mind. So then they were never balabatim in the first place to be moichel on the kavod. They just kozman, they say, don't do us any favors, we don't want to see you. So then insisting on being mechaber them is against their wishes, so that's not defined as kavod. But 40, 50 years later, if they want the kibud av, So then you would be mechuyev. So this is a shada that the achrayim raise. So some want to say this compromise based on this Rambam, based on this Yerushalmi, that calls man that the melech is alive and calls man that parents are alive. So then the nature of the mitzvah of kibud av v'aim and the nature of the mitzvah of kveid ha-melech is that it's binor machaver, a shibud. The king is running the whole country, so I have to show kibud to him as a person. And the parents brought me into the world, so I owe them a debt of gratitude. After they die, that's already a different din. They're not alive anymore, so you can't have a shibud binor machaver to a dead person. So then, lachamisa, the whole mitzvah of kibud av v'aim kveid ha-melech is only binor machaver. So binor machaver only makes sense if the parents were religious people, if the melech was a melech tzaddik. But if it's a melech rasha, the parents are rishon. So what do you mean? By showing kavod to the melech who died, that's indirectly going to show kavod to the Rabbanu Shalom. But he wasn't a religious man. He wasn't a shutuf with the Rabbanu Shalom.
The
Gemara quotes the pasuk, Nibza b'ein of Nimas, v'sirei Hashem yichabe, Nibza b'ein of Nimas, he humiliated himself as Chizkiyah melech, shigir atzmasavim al-mita shal chavolim. He was Mavaza the father. So Rashi asks in Sanhedrin and the Mems, when the Gemara quotes that comment, how was he allowed to do that? It's Kibarav for his father, and his father was the king before him. So it's a Kveid HaMelech. So Rashi says the father was a Rasha, so there's no Kibarav, and there's no Kveid HaMelech. But that's talking about Lachamisa. His father died. So Girat Musav Amitu Shalavam, after the father died. Kozman, the father was alive. So then there is a din of Kveid HaMelech and Kibarav Yayim. Kveid HaMelech, that's the Yerushalmi has like that. Here you see from the Psukim. He says, V'yor dekol avadecha eilei lai v'shtachvu li leimor. Moshe Rabbeinu is noi kovid in Paro, even though Paro was a melech roshim. And the same thing, Eliyahu Novi was mechabed achav ha-melech, even though achav was a nobid avid azar. He was a murderer. He was a rosh ha-gomer. But he's still v'yishanis es-mosnov. V'yor tzlefonov. Eliyahu Novi was mechabed melech. Not he was mechabed melech, he was afraid he's going to kill him. Even without being afraid, he's going to kill him. The din is that while the melech is alive, you owe a debt of hakoras atoyv to the melech, even if he's a melech rosh. After he dies, it's not so.
But according to the same logic that we have by the kibud av v'aim, the reason when he's alive he show kavod, even though he's a rosh, is because it's a mitzvah ben adam l'chavero. So are we saying that the kavod of the melech is a ben adam l'chavero?
In a certain sense, while he's alive, yeah. He's running the government, so self kol self.
Doesn't the Gemara say Melech Shemachal Kvod Inkvod Imachal?
Yeah.
So doesn't that show it's not Ben Adam L'Chaver?
That's the question, why? So some Rishonim say, the Mordechai says, the reason why Melech Shemachal Kvod Inkvod Imachal, because HaMamlech Melochim Veloi HaMlucho. He quotes from the Piyutim. Kadosh Baruch Hu sees to it that people are appointed as kings, but really he's the king. So really, the Hashem Hu Malkeinu, that's what in the Torah card, the national anthem. Hashem hu malkeinu velo anachnu avodim. It's true, Hashem hu malkeinu. But the Melech Basav Adam is assumed to be the representative of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Yeah. So the... Kol Zman, the Melech is alive. Again, the Mordechai says the reason why there's no Mechila is because he's not a Bailim to be Moichel. Because really the Ribbono Shel Olam is the Melech. And the Melech Basav Adam is only a representative. But other Rishonim say differently, not like the Mordechai. Other Rishonim say, Melech Shemachal Kvoyo Ein Kvod Amochel, because Son Tosim Alech HaMelech, the Melech himself has a chiyuv to be Mechabed the Malchus. So the Melech has no right to be Moichel. The Melech is also Mechiyuv. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's not Beinod Machaveru. Lachamisa, that for sure is not Beinod Machaveru. If the person is dead, so no Shibudim to a dead person, so that can only be Ben Adam Lamach.
And the concept of showing kavod for a melech who's not a Jew, the Makar is not Jewish, so what's the idea of showing kavod for a non-Jewish melech?
Yeah, that's the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, that it says, having mispal v'shlam v'shal malchus shal mali mara yishis rei chayim boloi. You have to have a government, and you have to show kavod for the malchus, otherwise the world will be hefka. Otherwise people will be swallowing each other up alive. People will kill each other and so on. So you have to show kavod for the malchus. When the Chassam Sofer was a young boy, when he was bar mitzvah, he said his own shtikel Torah at his bar mitzvah. So he quoted from a sefer that was written by his great grandfather on the Zikin. They say either Kos Yeshuas or Kos Yeshuas, I forgot which one. One of those two svarim was an ancestor of the Chassam Sofer. So he quoted something on the Zikin, because Seder Nezikin is known as Yeshua's, and then he explained why he doesn't agree. He shlugged it up. So the father of the Chassam Sofer was a Balabas, a religious Balabas. He didn't know who was right, whether his son was right or the great grandfather was right. So he slapped his son in public and said, "How do you have the chutzpah to disagree with the Elder Zayin?" So his Rebbe was there, Abnas Nadla. So he said to the father, "Why do you slap your son? He knows what he's talking about. The little kid is right and the Elder Zayin is wrong." So he told the Rav Moshe Sofer as a child, he told me to leave his father's home at Bar Mitzvah. He said, "You're going to stay home by your father. Anytime you're going to ask a kasha on the Rambam, I'm going to slap you. Not allowed to ask, on Rashi, not allowed to ask on Tosfos, not allowed to ask on the Gemara. Too much frumkeit. You have to ask on everything. If you don't ask, you'll never succeed in life." So he left his father's home. He left his father's home at the age of Bar Mitzvah, and he moved in with the Rebbe. And the Rebbe had a daughter, but it wasn't for her. He didn't marry the Chassam Sofer. She didn't marry the Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer married someone else. So he was learning for quite a few years by Rav Nos Nadler. And then one fine day, Rav Nos Nadler told Mishalo, he should go travel to the city Rechnich and learn by the Or Chodesh. He wrote a sefer Or Chodesh. Nobody even looks at the Or Chodesh now. At least when I was at Talmud here in high school, they sold the Or Chodesh on Gemara Pesach. So I bought it. I looked at it once, I think. And now they don't even sell it anymore. It's out of print. No one even looks at it. So he told me to go learn by the Or Chodesh. He went there for a couple of months. It was a long trip. He went there for a couple of months. He didn't enjoy it at all. And he came back to learn by Rav Nos Nadler in Frankfurt. And he had tainus why he sent them to learn there. But he never said anything. So many years later, 30, 40 years later, he was already the rabbi in Pressburg. So there was a din Torah that came to him. Two religious balabatim had a din Torah. That one sold merchandise to the other one. It was faulty merchandise. So it was a din Torah of a mekach tois. So he gave a psak, whatever the psak gave a psak, and he signed his name on the bottom of the psak. As it turns out, the merchandise that one sold the other was against the din of the machusa because it was smuggled into the country without paying taxes. And so the police arrested the Chassam Sofer because they assumed that he was in cahoots with these ganavim. If he signed the psaks, he must have known what was going on. And he was saying that he's innocent. He said he didn't know anything. He just told him there was merchandise. He didn't even know what it was. He didn't realize that they had violated the Malchus by bringing it into the country without paying any taxes. So they're sitting in court, and they were discussing how long they're going to put him in jail. So there was a policeman in the court. The court has policemen to make sure that no one makes any trouble. So the policeman asked the judge, "Your Honor, do you give me permission to say a word?" So he said, "Yes." So he asked the Chassam Sofer, "Did you ever live in Rechnich?" So he says, "Yeah, 30 years ago, 35 years ago, he lived there just for a few weeks." So he said, "Your Honor, the man is innocent." "How is he innocent?" So he said, "When he was a little boy, 16, 17 years old, and he would come to the synagogue every day to pray, and I used to stand and guard on that block." So he was the only one from all the children his age who would say, "Good morning, officer." No one else had any respect for the government. He was the only one. So he said, "How can you tell me now that he's a prominent rabbi that now he's going to violate Din and Mahusa as a young child when everybody made fun of the police, that no one had respect for the government? He was the only one who had respect. It can't be. The man is innocent." So he got off the hook because of that. So later on he thought maybe that's why his Rebbe sent him to go to Rechnich, to save his life later on. He shouldn't have to sit in prison. Yeah, but we hold that you always have to show cover to the Malchus, even if the Malchus is an Avodah Zarah Malchus, even like Paro Melech Mitzrayim. Not only a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael like Achav, even Paro Melech Mitzrayim, a Russian, he still have to show cover to the Malchus. The Mefarshim discuss, why does Moshe Rabbeinu say, "Nelchano Shloshes Yomim Bamidbar"? He only asked that they should go for a 3-day vacation to worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then they're going to come back to Paro. Why did he tell them a lie? They weren't going to come back after 3 days. The Rabbanu Shalom had to have Dafke in such a such a fashion. There should be through lying. So the Mefarshim give different suggestions on this difficulty. Years ago, there used to be, way before my time, when my father was a student here, there used to be a Professor Klotz, that was his name. He taught Tanakh in the college. So he printed a Dvar Torah. They didn't have the Beis Yitzchak then, so they had Heidenu. At that time, it was called Heidenu. So he printed a Dvar Torah on this in Heidenu, a Dvar Torah on Chumash, not on Gemara. So he says that they discovered in the archaeological digs in Egypt, they discovered that according to the Din and the Machusa, in those days, it was forbidden for a slave to worship any religion. The slaves were not considered human beings. They had no right to worship God. So the moment the Odon allows the slave to worship any religion, that means that he's Meshach with the slave. So when Moshe Rabbeinu asks, let us worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Balaz, that means, let us go free. That's the same as saying, let us go free. So he said, yeah, worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu here. First Parah says, worship, don't leave the city. Worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu here. What does it mean? Okay, I'll free you, but I want you to stay. You'll be independent people, but yeah, you can contribute to the society. I don't want you to remain slaves anymore, but I want you to be part of our society. Then Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, Hindisbach Lasham Lakenu, Stavis Mitzrayim, Leinei, and Veloyis Kalunu. We can't do it over here. We have to move away 3 days. 3 days, they're going to go away. 3 days, they're going to bring karbonas also. If they're worshipping their own religion, what it means is that he's setting them free. And he said, okay. He asked, don't go too far away. Doesn't mean don't go too far away. I want to make sure that you're going to come back to become slaves. Once he frees them, they're going to be free. The negotiations between the 3 days and so on, that's on details outside of the freedom. But the etzem act of worshipping any religion meant an act of freeing. The Gemara has such a similar thing. Gemara has in Gittin later on. If the Adon is minich tefillin on the Eved, so it's a simon that he was meshachre the Eved. Because even though the women volunteer mitzvah sesher shalaz man groma, women volunteer to listen to tkiyas, and the women volunteer to sit in the sukkah and shake a lulav and so on, but they don't volunteer to wear tefillin. And the Eved Knani also doesn't volunteer to wear tefillin. It's a question why, but they didn't. So if the Yodim was Rabbi Hinech Lot Tefillin, it's a simon that the Rabbo is saying, I'm freeing you. The fact that he lets the Eved, where he's Minech Tefillin Bifnei Rabbo, is a simon that he's letting the Eved go free. You have at the end of the parsha, interesting, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Kitzesi Esir, Efes Kapai Al Hashem, I'll leave the city, and then he's going to pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Rashi quotes from the Medrash, why does it have to be Kitzesi Esir? So Rashi is quoting from the Mechilta, from the Tanoim. Because the whole city was full of Avodah Zarah, and therefore what? You're not allowed to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the presence of an Avodah Zarah. That's an interesting idea. So the Chassidish Rebbe, the Bnei Yisoschar, of Hirsch Melech Dinever, writes in his Sefer Derech Pikudecha, he thinks that this is a real din. He says, we have a din, one is not permitted to daven in the presence of Tzoa. Meiraglayim is min haTorah. It's only keneged Omer Rishon when it's coming out of the body. If you have a puddle on the floor of Meiraglayim min haTorah, it's mutim in the Rabbanon and sauce. But if you have Tzoa, then it's a din min haTorah that you're not allowed to daven keneged Tzoa. So, or let's say something has a reach ra, something smells awful. Let's say we left some salami out of the refrigerator for 2 months and it smells awful, it's rotten. So you're not allowed to daven when it has a bad smell. So what if in the slaughterhouse, the Darkei Tshuva on Yeridei Hilchos Shechita and Siman Yutes, the Siman of Babrichas HaShechita, raises the question. In the slaughterhouse, the place is full of blood all over the place, and the blood has an awful smell. Not that the blood spoiled, that's the natural smell of blood, has an awful smell. So is it permissible to daven, is it permissible to say a bracha on Shechita in the slaughterhouse, it's already full of this awful smell? So he quotes the Acharonim that that's muta, an awful smell, you're not allowed to daven, is only if the thing had a good smell, or no smell at all, and then it deteriorated, it rotted, and now it has a bad smell because of the rotting. But if that's the natural, you have a chemical that has a natural bad smell, so there's no halacha that says you're not allowed to daven. So that's the same thing. Soya, meraglai, means that you took food into your system, and then this is a waste product. The acids in the stomach, whatever, the enzymes in the stomach work on all the food. And this is the waste product that comes out. So it really decomposed and it deteriorated. Started off as food and drink. Then it due to decomposition and the deterioration, so it turns into tzoya meraglai. So he assumes that the same is true regarding Avodah Zarah. Let's say originally we had some sticks and stones. So they were fine. Muta ba'no. Someone, a nochri, goes and he worships Avodah Zarah. So the thing becomes osamano. Osamano means it deteriorated. It used to be muta ba'no. Now it became a dovash al Avodah Zarah. Osamano. So even though it doesn't smell bad, and it doesn't look so bad, it looks exactly the same as before, it's not soya, it's not meraglayim, and it's not rotted food, But it is rotted. It used to be muta banua, now deteriorated, al pi halacha, now it's also banua. So he says that has the din, like tzoa. That's why it's called avodas gilulim, because golol is tzoa. So he says, to daven can I get a dover shel avodas zara, that the goyim worship if it's a religious symbol. Let's say there's a cross in a room. So they don't worship the cross itself. The cross is, represents to them osahuish. They worship osahuish. The cross is a religious symbol, so it's not osamano. But if you take have a pesel, you have a totem pole that the Indians worship, they take a deify this thing. And it's taka osamano. So he says then, if it's ir milea avodas gechavim, so the Mechilta means to say that you're not allowed to daven. That davening keneged that. It's like davening keneged soya meraglin, because it deteriorated. It's an interesting chiddush. When I was in college, I took Professor Soloveitchik for chemistry. He taught the non-science majors. So he taught the history of chemistry. He was easy on us. So he said when he studied in the Sorbonne, so the students, the chemistry students, when they wanted to go to the theater to hear a concert, so they couldn't afford the good seats up in the front. So they could only pay for the cheapest seats in the back. So at the end of the day, they were working with chemicals all day long that smelled awful. But after 10 minutes, they get used to it. So you don't even realize that it smells awful. So they would make sure they would smear on their hands, on their body, a chemical that smelled awful. They would buy the cheapest seats in the back, and they would sit there for 10 minutes, and the people right in front of them would be dying from the awful smell. So they would move somewhere else. So they would move 5 rows up. Then the people in the next couple of rows would smell this awful smell. They would leave. If they would have stayed long enough, they would have gotten used to it also, but they didn't. So I said, that's the way they got their front seats. Ooh, that's Taka Gnevi, not allowed to do that. but you're permitted to say a bracha. That's not the halacha. It says you're not allowed to say a bracha if it smells bad. Only if something that had a good smell deteriorated and it rotted and it spoiled. But if that's the way it smells, so that's a natural smell. That's what the Darkei Tshuva says, that that doesn't prevent you from davening. But Moshe Rabbeinu says he's going to go daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kitzei Siyasulir. Ephra says, Kapai El Hashem. And it says, Vayetze Moshe Min Paroi Esulir, Vayifuz Kapai El Hashem. So the Vilna Goyen has in the one of the opening psukim in Yeshaya, it says in the Haftarah of Shabbos Chazayin, the first parak in Yeshaya, with Farischem Kapechem Alim Eina Mekem Yidechem Domim Aleu. What does it mean of Farischem Kapechem Alim Eina Mekem? So the Vilna Goyen says, based on the Gemara, it goes on two things. When you duchen b'nisiyas kapayim, and when you pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'pisas kapayim. Farischem Kapechem is two ways. When the Kohanim duchen, so they hold the hands like this to demonstrate as if they're giving something. They're giving a bracha. When you pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'pisas kapayim, so you hold your hands like this, stretched out to receive a gift. He just gives a mashal. He just gives a mashal for the two types of priests' kapayim, based on the opening Mishnah Masechah Shabbos, that the Oni comes, knocks on the door, and he asks for an adobis. He stretches his hand out. Then the Balabayis is giving him something. So on Shabbos, he's over on the over on Hotzor, if they carry from the Rishus Hayachid into the Rishus Harab. So he says, when the Balabayis is giving the money or giving a gift, so he holds his hands like this. So that's the simon of giving. So when the Kahanim Duchen, they should hold their hands like this. They're giving a bracha, telling us brachas. And when you daven, you do priest's kapayim, you stretch your hands out like this, because you're asking, like an oni, I mean, bat pesel, you're asking for an edoven. Rabbi Kiveger, in Hilchas Tfilo, in the Haoris, on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, quotes Achreinim, who raised the question, when the Chachamim instituted the form in which we should daven, so why did they institute we should stand with our feet together? Why did they institute we should daven with priest's kapayim? Like Moshe Rabbeinu davens, like Shlomo HaMelech davens, with priest's kapayim in Tanakh. That was a traditional style of davening. So he quotes the Achreinim who say that since the Christians and the Obdei Avodah Zarah picked up this practice of davening with pieces kapayim, by stretching out your hands, so the Tanoim didn't want to introduce it by us. Even though it was this form of praying was ohuv, is man ho'avos, but it became sonui later, like Rashi quotes on the Pasuk of Matseva. Not allowed to make a matzeva, even though in the days of Avraham Yitzchak Yankov, they always used to do a matzeva. Evan achas, mizbech was many abonim. Matzeva is evan achas gedolah. So this was all bizman ha'avos, but it became sonoi bizman abonim, a later generation, since it was adopted, the practice was adopted by the Yosef Avodah. So the same over here. interesting in the Haftarah from Yecheskel. So the Navi says that when the Jewish people are in Golus, that's called the Chil Hashem. When the Jewish people return back to Eretz Yisrael, that's called the Kiddush Hashem, the Nikdashti. We daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We should daven that the Jewish government and Eretz Yisrael should be successful, that it should be Leman Shmo. We should accomplish a Kiddush Hashem. The opening pasuk, Koyam Hashem Elokim, the Kapsi is based on Minho Amashem Nafot Hashem, the Nikdashti Bom Le'eri Hagoyim, the Yoshval Ad Masim, and the Jews live in Eretz Yisrael, that's Kiddush Hashem. And the other Pesukim say, when we're in Golus, it's a Chil Hashem. The non-Jews view Eretz Yisrael as the Jewish country of the Jewish people. And if their army is successful, so that constitutes a Kiddush Hashem. If their army is not successful, if the government is not successful, that constitutes a Chil Hashem. The Goyim don't distinguish between religious Jews and non-religious Jews. Some of them do, but most of them don't. We really have to pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he should give success to the Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael and protect the Jewish Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael. And the army should always be successful, Laman Shemot, for his own sake. Okay.